Welcome to Big Blend Radio, where we celebrate variety and how it adds spice to quality of life. Hey, everyone. It is time to have our Big Blend Radio's Big Daily Blend show. See, say that twice real fast, 10 times real fast, see how it goes. But you know, our first Sunday of the Big Daily Blend, we always get to chat with Johnny Schaefer. Johnny is an award-winning vocalist. He's a composer. We love Johnny, and he comes on every, you know, first Sunday to have fun with us about what are the holidays. But with Valentine's Day being part of February, and everyone looks at February as a month of love, I thought, gee, Johnny, I think we better start talking about love songs and ballads and all that beautiful music. And of course, you know, love songs are not just for Valentine's Days. Let's not even talk about, what about breakup songs? Sometimes the love songs are the breakup songs. Sometimes they end up being the wedding songs. Oh, we haven't covered that yet. But anyway, I want you to keep up with Johnny. Go to hearjohnny.com, and that's Johnny with a Y. The link is in the show notes, but welcome back, Johnny. How are you?
I'm doing great. Happy Sunday. Happy February. Nice to be with you again.
Yeah. So love songs and ballads, not always the same, huh? You know,
when I think absolutely. Yeah. There's some really great, really up-tempo, fast love songs and ballads that have nothing to do with love. So, there's an overlap for sure, but you know, they can both be about all kinds of things.
Yeah, there's some like ballads that have to do with historical figures. I was thinking about that. And then some of the ballads that like heavy metal, like Guns N' Roses, I think were writing to women a lot. Honestly, I think their music was geared towards that. And so they did more ballads kind of than there's the love songs, but then there's like those happy love songs, you know, sugar pie, honey pie, you know, that kind of happy. You know, you're going to put it, you know, it's skipping your step kind of, you know, and I think it goes with the stages of romance, you know, and then you get to the moment of bring out the shaft, you know. Oh, that sounds bad. Mm-hmm. But you know what I mean though, right? You know, it's like the hey baby music too. You want that. Like, so there's a different level. So tell me a little bit about your songwriting voyage in regards to songs about love. I mean, do you sit down and go, okay, I'm going to write about love, or does it just kind of come out like and be inspired by a feeling?
It's really interesting because sometimes my saddest songs have come out of really happy times in my life and or vice versa. And I've thought about that. I write very kind of my best stuff comes like at 3 a.m. or 4 a.m. Like I'll go to sleep thinking about something, or I'll have thought about something during the day, and then I'll wake up in the middle of the night with this song in my head. So I sneak out of the room so I don't wake up my husband, or I have a phone and I just type the lyrics in really quick on like a notepad, you know, on my phone, so I don't forget it. I have to do it right away. But I always, I try to write, I guess I just write from things I'm thinking about. So sometimes I'm thinking about love, and that can be romantic love, or it can be other kinds of love. Or sometimes I'm, you know, it's other subjects, but, I think it, you know, for me, songwriting comes from just the sum of my experiences and my, you know, when you're writing, it's a series of choices. That's why I think it's odd that with AI, people think that computers can write about love, because I don't think computers will be able to actually love and then have, you know, and then write about their emotions about it. But who knows, maybe they'll be able to teach them. I don't know. It doesn't.
Yeah. This is how it feels. It's weird.
Yeah.
It's weird because everything doesn't even like the art. And we've talked about that on shows before about even looking at the art. Mm-hmm. You can tell it's like, you can tell when someone just, you know, put a filter on and there it is. It's just not the same. Mm-hmm. There's just not there's a warmth that comes with, well, unless you're a cold person, maybe you're going to put some cold feeling on it. But you know, when we talk about love and music, goes so far. I think I love this conversation about love songs, and we'll get into some of your songs and some songs that you picked out, and I picked out some too. And It's interesting. We actually picked a lot of the same musicians and singers. Different songs though, which is interesting. Yeah. But I feel like, you know, music is such a part of a life journey that, you know, with love, it's like, I remember, you know, I, for those who don't know, yes, I had a brief stint of being married, very brief. And I mean, really brief. And there was a song from REM and called Everybody Hurts. Now that was our wedding song. Like, hello, dumb. You know, I mean, it said it right there. But it was actually about not even necessarily the lyrics, though the lyrics, and not necessarily a love song, you know, it's more of a ballad then, right? So it was about the sound and the tone of his voice. Oh, Michael's voice is incredible, right? It just, he kind of just sings right to your soul that it, that was it. I mean, we both, you know, loved that song so much, but it had nothing. I don't know why we chose that. It was just a thing that we both loved. And so it had nothing to do with it being a love song, but it was intimate. And we still didn't last. So.
It's funny you bring up REM, because that song, I Can't Fight This Feeling Anymore, that came out right when I was finally coming to terms with being gay. So, it's not how the song was intended, but sometimes you apply, art in different ways, and that song kind of expressed how I was feeling at that point. Like, I just can't fight this anymore.
Right. You know, that's really it. I mean, it just goes with what connects with your psyche. And I know I've talked about this on shows before too. You know, past dear love of mine was our bass player in the band. And you're not supposed to date the band members, but we did. And we were very, very tight. And he was like a son to Nancy. And our lives, we went in different directions out of our own personal pursuits of life and beliefs and even politics, because I didn't even realize what, you know, was going on. And then, whoa, oopsie, you know, and this wasn't going to change. And yet we were very close, and he got married and had kids, but we were still close. And he messaged me on Facebook. We kept kind of our distance out of respect for his wife and family and everything. So we didn't, you know, we weren't, we had our naughty times. But the day before he died, he messaged me. And his death was a very weird, yeah, it was, but music, literally, I had to just turn everything off. And then I was like, what do I do? How do I cope without music? Because everything, we had dissected just about every song I know in the band, like dissected it, going, oh, this is how this needs to sound, or, you know. And so it really killed me. And then it was a salvation. And then everything was a love song. You know what I mean? It is a weird thing, but he was a very deep soul and love, and still I'll always be like a heart person. You know, there's certain people in life with true love. It was true love, you know, and all songs, it really didn't matter. There's just memories. And that's what I was saying about music, that it becomes part of that. So it's not necessarily a love song, is it? It's just about what connects and connects between two people, you know?
Yeah, I think love encompasses many things, and there are things that lead us to feel love for, romantic love for someone that contribute to that. And so, in a way, I think there could be songs about something completely different that, that we would see as our song or our love song or whatever, that because of what they, the feelings that they lead us to, and they strengthen the relationship, and it's something that we have in common, maybe, with another person. And so that's one of the powerful things about music, and why a lot of times people call music the universal language, because it brings up so much in us.
It transcends. It does. It really does. And it can set the scene for the mood, like the shaft. Bring Mr. Shaft out. We want the shaft, you know. I do love that. I mean, that's sexy music. I mean, now we get into the sexy part, right? You know, you're going to have it, you know, it, you go from the, it is interesting, the different stages of courting, court, you know, dating, and then courting is an old word, isn't it? That's old. We don't use that very often, but I kind of like the whole courtship thing, though. I like that.
Oh, yeah.
For the animals, birds do it, you know. They show their feathers and do this dance. I mean, if you watch doves, how they act, I mean, it's a big deal, you know.
I haven't seen that.
Yeah, you know, when we lived out in the desert, we'd have the big, great white-winged doves, you know. And they had their season, man. And when they wanted it, ooh, naughty boys. But then when they got together, they were just so like, okay, we're a couple now, you know. And the male would be pretty, you know, everywhere doing his thing with all kinds of girls. But then there was this moment where you'd see them together and it was like, wow. You know, and they talk about turtle dove love and all of that. It's so cute. And it's like, wow, you see with animals, you know, that courtship happening, and humans too. I mean, it's in teenage, when you were in high school, didn't you're like, when you had feelings for someone, it was everything. Like you couldn't think about anything else. Like,
oh yeah.
Did you have music when you were in high school that like, ooh, I want to like, this is the song, you know?
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I think, and even, you know, not even past high school. I mean, like, in fact, like, my husband Parker and I, when we saw Moulin Rouge, that song Come What May, that kind of became our song. And when we did our wedding announcement, he used that song in the, we did like a digital wedding announcement. And he used that song and did this really cute little thing that, you know, this kind of animated thing that told everybody that we were getting married and invited people, and it was kind of cool. But that's been our song all these years. So, yeah.
Oh man, that's cool. Yeah. Well, he's such a fantastic videographer and filmmaker, not just a videographer, but all of it, right? He does.
Yeah.
And you won awards.
I'm really lucky
for it.
That way.
Yeah, I know. It's like all in the family. There it is. It's like, hey, Paco, I got this idea. You know, let's go. That's cool. Yeah, what were some of the songs when you were in high school that you would consider love songs, like when you were like going to school?
Let me see.
I'm not trying to date us all out here, but you know, I was thinking, you know what, Fine Young Cannibals was a big deal. And God, I hate to say this. Oh no, I shouldn't go against the I remember now. I like the Fine Young Cannibals. I did, and I do. I still, I can't remember his name. Remember Terrence Trent D'Arby? He's changed his name, too.
Has he? Ooh. Oh, that's right. Yeah, I did hear about that. Yeah.
Talk about sex appeal. He was an amazing, he's still amazing to me. Terrence Trent D'Arby is like one of the most underrated, we should do a whole underrated musicians show. But he has sex appeal. Okay, so wait, love songs and sex appeal go hand in hand? Ooh. Yeah, I think they kind of do.
I think so. Yeah.
Yep. All right. So come on, some of yours.
We've talked about how I was a huge Melissa Manchester fan. And so Come In From the Rain was a song that really, I think that song, talked about finding shelter in a relationship. And so that song always has stuck out to me as a really beautiful love song. And it's a love song in both a romantic way, but also just a general way, because you can find shelter in non-romantic relationships too. And so I've always found that song to be really powerful. There was also a Barry Manilow song that I was just reminded of today, that somewhere down the road, where he kind of says, I understand that right now our roads need to diverge, you know, because you need to go off and do something else. But somewhere down the road, we're going to get back together. And I was getting ready to leave to graduate from high school and go off into the world. And so that song kind of always that had a lot of power for me at that time, you know, because sometimes loving people means letting them go. Later on, Alanis Morissette came out with a song, You Owe Me Nothing in Return. And it's one of the most powerful songs about relationships that I've ever heard. There's so much psychology and really advanced thinking in that song to me. And it actually helped me during a period. There was a time, Paco and I have been together like over 20 years, but there was a period where we were apart. And in that time, I did a lot of work about just letting him go. And that song informed me, and it really helped me get through that, because she basically just says, you know, you can love someone else, you can, you know, you can find yourself, you can do all these things, and I give you permission, and I just love you, and you don't owe me anything. It's an incredible song, and I recommend it to anyone who is in that position where they need to let someone go. I once, this actually wasn't about Paco, but many years ago when I was real young, I had a crush on someone. Or no, I was in a relationship with someone, but it was clear that he didn't want to be in a relationship anymore. And a friend of mine said, you've got to let him go. Think of him as like a balloon, and it's tugging, and it wants to get away. And you just have to let the balloon go, and it'll float off. And maybe someday it will come back, but maybe it won't. And if it comes back, it's your balloon. And if it doesn't, it was never your balloon. And then, very interestingly, this friend of mine died a couple of weeks later. And I used to live on the 10th floor in Park La Brea in those towers at that time. And when I got the news that my friend died, I hung up the phone and I looked out the window, and a balloon was floating outside the window.
Oh, yeah. Isn't that weird? That's what I was telling you about my friend when he passed, and he messaged me right before he died. It was weird. And it was about a sunrise. Yeah. And we had a relationship on sunrises, and it was weird. It's weird. Like, I believe those things. It's interesting what you say about the balloon and letting go, because it reminds me of Stevie Nicks. I mean, talk about ballads and love songs. Jeez.
Oh, yeah.
She's a queen of that. But remember her song Landslide, which was about her coming to terms of her career. Which was a big love for her, you know. You know, love isn't easy. And that's what makes it the biggest fodder of writing for songs. Songwriting, a majority of it is love. Majority.
Yeah.
What do you think? About 80% of the songs are about love in some way. You know, it's, you know, even drama, loss, love, all of it, you know. It's the biggest topic.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, that's why Paul McCartney had that thing, talking about filling the world with silly love songs, and, you know, what's wrong with that, you know? I mean, and the Beatles wrote a lot about love.
Yeah, they did. Carole King. Look at Carole King, Carly Simon. You know, I think about some of them, you know, some powerhouse vocalists, you know, you got like Melissa Manchester, Bette Midler. Celine Dion, you know, Mariah Carey. Yeah. They were just huge. Oh, Whitney Houston,
Ricky Lee Jones on another. Was that? Oh. Yes, of course. Yeah, and I'll Always Love You. And
and everyone thinks Willie Nelson wrote it. He didn't. It was her. It was Dolly. They said that. He covered it, and Patsy Cline.
Yeah.
Okay, now I'm going off.
Yeah.
Sorry. But Ricky Lee Jones, I know you've got her down for a lot. It's true.
Yeah, she and there could be many more. I think what's interesting about her, you know, the first time I heard her, I didn't like her, because at that time of my life, I was still in high school and I was learning how to sing properly, and so it was all about diction, writing, choir, and so I couldn't understand what she was saying, so I just dismissed her. I'm like, ugh, why do people like her? And then when I was in college, a roommate said, okay, look, sit down and listen to this song three times and read the lyrics. And it was her song, A Lucky Guy. And he goes, just read the lyrics while she's singing. And then if you don't like her after that, okay, I'll let it go. But I just think you need to do that. And I did, and I totally got it. Like, I was all, oh man, like, there's so much emotion here. And that's why, And it didn't bother me ever again that you have to look at the lyrics to understand what she's saying sometimes, because it's just the feeling that she puts into it. So she's really, there's nothing like her. She's just got a unique sound. And, you know, she's just a lot of times she just says, well, I just happen to have this voice, you know, it's just the way it is. So, you know, it's what I have to work with. And
I feel like she's someone that just is sitting down and telling you a story, like you're a close friend at the table. Mm-hmm. That's how I feel about her.
Yep.
You know, mm-hmm. And, you know, and then you got to look at Brandi Carlile. Did the same thing about Joni Mitchell, and you have Joni Mitchell on your list too. You and I have different songs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I have A Case of You because.
Oh, yes.
When she did it, and it's not on Spotify, the older, not the, like the newer version.
Yeah,
like
a lot of her stuff got pulled. Yeah. From Spotify a while back. Yep.
Well, I think it was probably she was with Neil Young and all of that when they all pulled stuff. And, But she that song was when she was older, right? And I love when you hear these women who had such high pitched, you know, pretty angelic voices, like mature, like later in life, and they go down a whole, you know, suddenly baritone, you know, alto. And I'm like, oh man, and she did it. I like Stevie Nicks better now, you know, like Bob Dylan, same thing, you know.
Yeah,
I love Bob Dylan's voice now. You know?
Oh yeah, the whole youth oriented thing. There's definitely something to be said for youthful energy and the wide eyed youthful perspective on life, but it shouldn't be at the expense of appreciating the life experience that older musicians bring to the table. I mean, just one of the reasons I chose both sides now was, you know, that album where Joni sang with the orchestra and you know, came back to these songs decades later. And it just added this whole new level to those songs. And Both Sides Now was used to perfection in the movie Love Actually, in that scene with Emma Thompson, you know, where she just finds out that the present that she thought her husband had bought her for her, he gave to someone else. And then, you know, she goes in the other room and she never says a word in that scene, but they're playing Both Sides Now. And Emma Thompson goes through this whole litany of feelings and you get everything she's feeling without her ever saying a word. And part of the power of that scene is that song. Mm-hmm. And it's one of my favorite movie scenes ever. And then also it was used in the opening of the Olympics, which on the YouTube link I sent you, it was the Vancouver Olympics in 2000 something. I forget what year it was.
Oh, 2012.
When they had the Winter Olympics in Vancouver, and they had this kid doing it. It was about going through the prairies, and he was like, you know, they had him on wires, and he was like flying all over the stadium. And it's one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen on television. And again, part of what made it beautiful is that song, you know, just the way Joni Mitchell sings it and the years of experience that you hear in her voice. And then with the strings, it's so beautiful.
And what about,
Case of You is amazing too.
Case of You is like, you know, I could drink a case of you and I'd still be on my feet, you know. It's like that's when endurance of love comes in, right? Everybody's ups and down, that endurance. I mean, those lyrics. I mean, she was a hell of a lyricist. I mean, her words are Bob Dylan, Bob Dylan, Tangled Up in Blue has to be. And as a love person, every time I hear that, I have like a person, you know, that, you know, it's just, you know, what do you call it? Unrequited love. That's the worst. But, you know, I think it keeps us younger, you know, keeps a little spark of like, ooh, I wonder if. Mm-hmm. And I came close to that wonder if, and then it wasn't going to be, and it wasn't supposed to be. And I cried all the way home.
Oh, yeah.
It was like, no, we're not meant to be, but God, can we just be silly for a night? But anyway, not that I want to spill my guts on Big Blend Radio year, but you know, it's you know, I mean, it, you know, the thing to me is when, you know, did you ever make, like, this is the person who made the best mixtapes and CDs, and just was that. And we used to make mixtapes for each other. And that was, I think, one of the most romantic things you could do was make a mixtape. Now we have playlists. I get it, but it's just not as cool as a mixtape because you had to get, you had, I mean, that was work. That was effort. Now you click, you know? Did you make mixtapes? Did you do it?
Oh yeah, a lot of my friends and I used to send them to each other. I don't remember specifically doing it. Like, I think someone I was dating I did that with.
You know what?
But a lot of my friends and I were doing it, and you learn so much from people in the songs that they share with you.
I'm going back.
It's almost like here's a piece of my soul. You know, like
exactly what you care about, what you love. You know, or that you know that they'll enjoy, even if you don't like it. You're like, do I really have to put on it? Yeah, okay, I'll give it to them. You know. But that's the other thing is, you know, at the beginning, everybody pretends to like each other's music. And then later it's like, I hate that. I don't like it. So you have to be honest at some point. Now, like, if it's not my thing, it's not my thing. And I've learned, I've grown up to go, it's not my cup of tea, you know. go for it. If you're enjoying it, that's your thing. And I was just thinking now, Fun Young Cannibals, I think came out earlier from high school now. I think we had Right Said Fred came out. And then we had like Sting and Police were really big. Talking Heads were big. Pink Floyd, all of that. And Richard Marx, that's who I was thinking of earlier. Richard Marx was the big, you know, at the high school dance. If, you know, someone was going to get a little too close, it was going to be with a Richard Marx song. Oh, my God. Oh, no. No offense to Richard Marx. But and then we had Bryan Adams, too, was a big deal. That was he was a big deal back in the day. But that was early high school, I'm going to think. I think I was like 15, 14 or 15. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to say, when you talk about, you know, not liking people's music, I years ago started asking people what it was they liked about things, and then they would explain it to me, and sometimes it actually helped me appreciate the song. Maybe it wasn't my favorite, but I would appreciate through their eyes or their ears what it was that, you know, made them like it, and I understood it better, because a lot of times when I don't like music, I don't really understand it, or I can't relate to it. And so by them telling me why they relate to it, it helps me see it a different way.
I mean, it's true. Like if you, especially like some songs, like some music is really heavy, like heavy jazz and stuff, right? If you, you know, start at Herbie Hancock to go to Miles Davis, maybe, you know, that kind of thing. Start with at a, like if someone likes someone like hip hop, right? If you don't know about hip hop and you can't quite get into it and you have a friend, well, maybe start with something a little easier, like Michael Fronte or something to get you started. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like there's always like a bridge, a musician that bridges the gaps. And then you either like it or not, but at least appreciate it. Like to me, that's where I'm at. Even if it's not my thing, it's like appreciating and listening, and you can tell when the musician or the performers or both songwriters are all in, or if it's just another do something for the label stuff, you know.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That you can tell the difference. You can tell when it's well crafted and cared for versus I'm just throwing it out there. That stuff makes me mad. And you can tell. And then some people like it, you know. There are some songs I go, why? But then it still works. A lot of one-hit wonders, Walking on Sunshine, like that. That song will never die. That song will never, ever die. 99 Red Balloons, you know. There's nothing wrong with them, but it's still a little too, like, poppy for me. But then at the same time, like, I can sing every word to them. Bananarama, come on. Okay, what about Carole King? Can we talk about Carole King being one of the best songwriters on the planet?
Right? Oh, yeah.
And, yep, yeah. Yep. And even I Feel the Earth Move, that's pretty good for a love song. But really, it's true. Love songs just sometimes become a love song because it's an intimate moment between two people or shared experience that becomes part of your memory, your scrapbook, you know?
Well, it you're wanting to express these feelings that you have, and so a song does it for you, and so it's a way of, yes, that's what I'm trying to say, you know, and it's a way to help you share with the other person what you're feeling about them.
Well, go back to like my very first love, like high school, like proper, like a like 17 years old, proper, right? I say proper because like you're a little bit older age at that point, and at that point I was, you know, starting to work and all that, and I've always been working, but you know, my first, you know, I had boyfriends, but like, you know what I mean? That was just younger, silly stuff, and now that became the serious one. And in South Africa, they go away in the military, like drafted. As soon as they finish high school, guys are drafted for 2 years. Or you go to college and then they get you later. And anyway, my boyfriend at the time, so when you think of love songs between us, it was all Peter Tosh and Bob Marley and Bonta Bonta. And it was all reggae, right? Because he introduced me more into that, you know. So it had, there was definitely, come on, Bob Marley and love. He sang a lot about love. And so love songs are not always just about romance. Their love songs are about like collective love, community.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
You know, all you need is love, you know.
Oh, yeah. The Beatles.
Love is all around. Da, 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 da. And some of the biggest ballads of, you know, have been about love in a big way.
And there's those power ones. Come on. Like, you know, let's go to the Guns N' Roses. Oh, what about, what is it? Brett Michaels, Every Rose Has Its Thorn. Has a thorn. Oh, yeah, that's a reminder. Oh, what about Annie Lennox? Come on. Cher. Now I'm going, like, there's a lot of women, but guys wrote some really, like, Sting. You have Sting on here. You said, Be Still My Beating Heart. That's a good song. And, but I have Fields of Gold. Yeah, that.
Yeah, that's from that same period. I think there was something special going on during that period for me with him. He dug deep, and those songs were really phenomenal.
You have Peter Gabriel. I didn't expect that for love songs, but In Your Eyes, yeah, I mean, when you think about it,
Well, that has one of my all-time favorite lines, where he says, "I see the doorway to a thousand churches." That line just really, I've always, when I, the first time I heard that, I was like, wow, that, talk about saying a lot with a very few words. For me, I don't know, it's just a brilliant line.
Peter Gabriel is like crazy cool though, man. I mean, you think about it, Salisbury Hill, I still can't get past it. There's just, I will never get, and then when he rides his bicycle and you watch the videos, right? But like just even the beginning of it. And just there's something to that that no one can, I don't think you can ever replicate it. It is just his sound. He did this. And then when videos came out, he was like one of, I think was one of the first. Just come
Yeah,
on,
his videos
Peter.
are many of my favorite videos are
Now I can't get rid of Salisbury Hill in my head. It's already playing. As
his
soon as he put that, I read
videos.
that list, your list, I'm like, I can hear In Your Eyes and then there, but like Salisbury Hill just keeps butting it out the way. I'm sorry. So it's like a love affair with certain, what about love affairs with music? Like there's the earworm, right? There's certain ones that you just become enamored with it. Like a song just is something that is precious, love, you love, and it just be, you have like a weird romance with a song. An individual does. It's weird, but it's true.
Well,
I have songs
have you
that I
talked to
go to
go ahead.
all the time just to recenter.
It's completely, they talk about music being the soundtrack of your life, and so certain songs take me right back to a certain moment in my life or a certain person, or situation. And yeah, like the one, You Owe Me Nothing in Return that I was talking about, that song has just taught me so much in relationships, not just romantic, but just in letting things go in general, of that idea of just not being attached to outcomes and just letting things be and giving, giving into the notion that it's, things are going to be what they're going to be, and I'm okay with that. And that's really good.
Now, In Excess, Never Tear Us Apart.
Oh, yeah.
I have to put that on there. And then Mystified. Then Simply Red. That was that. Like, I think In Excess, Simply Red, all they were all in my high school years. In U2's Joshua Tree came out when I was. Yeah. That's more my style at that time. And they have love songs. I mean, Simply Red, and I figured it out. I kept telling Nancy, why is it that I like these certain musicians? What was it? Because I'm not like, that's not necessarily, like, I'm into blues, and that's really who I am, you know? And then I looked and listened, and I realized they're all blues singers, but with pop. They took blues into a pop setting. Interestingly, weird. Like, when I started dissecting, like, Van Morrison, Into the Mystic, dude, come on, we can't beat that song. That's one of the best on the planet. But that's blues. It's still blues. There's a whale in it, even though it's white. It's blues. And Simply Red did play with B.B. King. So did you ever listen to Simply Red?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Oh, man. Now, why? But we have stuff today. I keep going backwards. Love was past that in my life, past that time. You know, when we think about songs, there are. What about musicians today? Melissa Manchester, you were talking about her. She's got a new album, like new song out, right now.
She does, and it's reimagining an old song, which she hasn't. This is her 50th year in the music industry. And she's, like a lot of artists, she's going back and re-recording some of her songs because, she doesn't own the rights to them. So when they're used in movies and things like that, she doesn't get anything for it. And not only that, but just sort of a way of celebrating those songs and, that time of her life. So it was a way of reconnecting not only herself, but her fans to those songs as well. And she has this song, Just Too Many People. It was one of my favorite songs the first one. As a kid, I can clearly remember laying on my bedroom floor and, next to my record player, and I would play it, and then I'd move the needle back and put it on that song again, like, dozens of times. That song is about, loneliness in a crowded world. Like, there's people all around, and yet you're lonely, and getting past that and coming together. And we re-recorded Whenever I Call You Friend, I was associate producer on that track, and then Kenny Loggins came in and Dave Koz played sax. And then she says, I'm going to do Just Too Many People. Do you want to come in, on that? And just to be able to kind of talk through and be in the room when she was reimagining that song, it's faster now, and I think it really has a contemporary feel, and yet it also harkens back to the original. I think we've found a really nice balance for that. And I just read a statistic that 60% of Americans report feeling lonely, and despite all the technology we have, all the ways that theoretically, you shouldn't feel lonely, and yet more and more people than ever feel lonely. Mm-hmm. And it's because a lot of this technology is cutting us off from each other. Mm-hmm. And so that song, I think, has a really powerful message about reconnecting with each other and coming together to bring back more love and connection.
And she also was on your song, You Can't Hide the Light. And I love that song. You write a lot of inspirational music, which is good for the soul, because sometimes you have to recenter yourself, or romance or love, and to be able to give of yourself, you have to be centered yourself sometimes. And sometimes giving recenters you. But music, it's like a calming, and that's the other thing. As much as you want to share music with people and you share these experiences, but sometimes music is your own personal thing. That's part of your own soundtrack of who you are. And you
Yeah,
may, you know what I mean? That's one of those songs, I think.
that song, it's about barriers in relationships and overcoming them. And when she was on the show, she talked about her initial reaction to the opening lyric of that song, which is, the thing about barbed wire is that you can see right through it. And her only initial question to me was, are you sure you want to use barbed wire? Because it's such a, she goes, it really brings up a lot for me. And I said, well, actually, yeah, because the thing is that sometimes these barriers between us seem so insurmountable. And so if you're using a barbed wire as an analogy for an obstacle in a relationship, then if you have the right tools, you can get past barriers. And so with barbed wire, you can just cut right through it and it's gone. And so that was why, even though it's so dangerous and it seems so ominous, there is a way through it. And actually, Alanis Morissette has a song, "The Only Way Out Is Through," and that's a really big theme for me, because you can't go around things; you have to push through them and work through them. And so that's what I was trying to convey with that song. And I, we brought in the dancers, and they so beautifully for the music video conveyed that, what I was trying to bring across, that, you can see the light in each other and that can pull you through to get you past whatever barriers are between you. So I
Yeah,
was
I
really happy
agree.
how that song was received,
Yeah, I love it. I love it. And you also have on your list, Don't You Dare by Jill Knight. Well, you wrote it, and that was the soundtrack to the book. Don't You Dare.
And
We
that,
had that
if
show.
you
That
want to
was
talk
awesome.
about love, I mean, that, that was a forbidden love that happened 100 years ago. Gayla Turner found a box of photos that showed her grandmother and another woman in a love story, and a bunch of other people that were around them that were also LGBTQ. And it was very dangerous at that time to have that kind of love for people and live it. So it was very risky, for them to take those photos. And so the song is really about, daring to love someone. And I love the way Jill sang it, and her guitar work on it,
That it's it I love that. It came out so good. I think it's one of my favorites that you've written. I
thank
just
you.
it yeah, it just sinks right in. I mean, it's and then you think about, when it's I talked about unrequited love, right? And then at the same time, there's love where, now you have to go through those boundaries, society's stuff. See how I watched my language there? It was good. But so then it's like that's an additional stress, because hooking up with someone, that's a stressful thing, man. It's like, oh my gosh, I have to get my hair cut now. It's like, it's like all of a sudden your life changes, and it and romance and love, even if you're wanting to be on the dating scene and you want the big hookup, right? That's still It's still stressful, man. The whole thing is stressful. And but then when it's right and
Sure
it
is.
gets there, it's like, oh, that's cool. I can breathe in and breathe out and lean in, lean out, but and then to make it endure over time, oh man. Like it's a lot, That's a lot. My little marriage stint was like, oh hell no. We're not doing it. No. Like I thought it was all cool, and then I was like, oh hell no, that will be the end of that. But like it's still, I knew how I feel, and I think it's songs you feel,
Yeah, I
and
have
that's the
another
beauty.
friend who had a very short marriage like that, and she says kind of the same things, that their initial attraction to each other was just so powerful that they just went for it. And then they started learning all these other things about each other and same kind of thing. Their lives just, they realized that they wanted to go different directions and they hadn't really worked through all that stuff, you know, and so they had to, you know, try to.
Like, I'm not going to fund him. Yeah. And his cigarettes and all that. Nope. Sam Cooke. Bring it on home.
Oh, yeah.
I love, you know, Sam Cooke had that voice, man. Ooh.
Oh, Sam Cooke. Yep.
We used to sing Bring It On Home, Bring Your Sweet Lovin' Home to Me. We used to sing that in our band.
Mm-hmm.
That was one of our covers.
Yeah, the voice, and he knew how to use it.
Mm. Oh, yeah. And, well, he had a lot of lady friends, too. No kidding. Around.
Yeah.
I mean, his death is still weird. We had his daughter on the show a few years back, about three. It was during COVID, I think.
Oh,
and
wow.
Or right before, maybe. 2019, 2020. Okay. Carla. Oh my gosh, can she sing like him? And she really tributes her dad, you know. Obviously his life was cut short soon, and that's a whole lot. I mean, I didn't go there with her on the interview because, you know, that's not necessary.
Yeah.
I mean, it's but like he was with some lady friend at some time and somebody was jealous. There was something going on in the hotel or I don't know, but he was a naughty boy. He was a naughty boy. He loved his ladies. He's definitely, you know. I do want to bring this up that today is airing. The show date is actually on Liberace's birthday. Can I just bring that up? Like, we got to give a shout out to him, man. He glitters. Yeah. Like, he is the. Can I just, I want to call him Glitterati. Like, Liberace, come on. But was he not amazing? His piano, come on. He was. He's an icon. In history. I don't know anybody doesn't know who he is. Well, maybe the younger generation.
Yeah.
But, I mean, growing up, I knew all about it. Like, Nancy always had him playing. And you know what I mean? He was amazing, you know?
He performed at Magic Mountain when I was in high school. And my dad took me there. And I remember that was when I knew I was gay, but...
Really? Wow.
It really... freaked me out, so I hadn't told anyone. And so just seeing him being so flamboyant, sorry, I have a frog in my throat, really threw me. And I just remember being uncomfortable and yet fascinated at the same time.
Wow.
You know, because, he was very much just himself, you know.
And he's from Wisconsin, speaking of gay in Wisconsin. Hello. I wonder, like, what was going on? It was all cold. Everybody's like, hey, we're not going to, you know, not have some warmth and cuddles. Come on. No, but I mean, you know, obviously he went to Palm Springs. He wanted warmth. But I mean, I think he had this, well, definitely flamboyance, right? But just even having the chutzpah to do what he did and how he performed and how he just went for it. I think there's something to really just tip a hat to him in that way of just putting on a show, you know? I wonder if he watched Victor Borg, you know? Victor Borg was like that too, you know, put on a show.
Interesting because, absolutely, and I think sometimes I wonder if Elton John took a little bit of a cue from Liberace because
I think
there was some of that showmanship, you know, in Elton John as well, you know? And I've always wondered about that if he, you know, if he sort of at least got some permission, you know, subconsciously to be able to just kind of be out there and, you know, be his own, do his thing, and, you know.
Yeah. With the sunglasses. Remember all the glasses and sunglasses?
And the sequin capes and all that stuff. So, yeah.
Well, one torch passes to the next, right? It's like, like an allowance. And it's almost like if you have that in you to do it and you don't do it, it's almost rude to not follow it. You know what I mean? It's like if that is, when you know deep down, you're supposed to do that.
Yeah.
You know, I think you should. It's important, you know.
Yeah.
And I really agree with you about Liberace and Elton John. I never thought of the two of them. But yeah, it makes 100% sense. Like, duh, yeah.
I mean,
you know what I mean?
I don't know, but I've always been curious about that. It's, you know, like, if at least on some level, Elton John felt more permission, you know, to do that. Because, you know, I think great artists pave the way for other people, and they, when they break a boundary, then it gives permission to others to do it, and it makes them feel more free to do it. And then they take it to the next level. And, you know, I think that's a lot of what, because even Elvis was a big showman that way too.
Yeah. I was going to say, yeah. Liberace died on the February 4th. He wasn't born on February 4th. Checking myself. Mm-hmm. But you think he died in 87. So you think about when, you know, Elton John got big. It makes sense what you're saying. Yeah. The timing. And even when you think about Freddie Mercury, right? Look at what he did.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And God, I just... That was a showmanship. But then, you know, I also think about the 60s and 70s, about showmanship, about like how you dress, how you, the moves you do, you know, and I think that's still a huge part of pop music now. I mean, all of that is still there. Like, look at Beyonce and Lady Gaga and all that, and Pink and all the antics they do. It's more than standing up and singing. Hell no, that's not happening with me, but I'll fall down. And it's, but honestly, there's something about putting on a show. And I know they do these big, huge shows like Taylor Swift and all of that. They do these huge, huge shows. But sometimes I just feel like, can't we just be able to do something as a really good show, but minimalist, you know?
Some of my favorite concerts have just been like really intimate. You know, it's just the person on the stage or at a piano or with a guitar. And those really intimate moments. But, you know, those other, the big shows are really fun too. You know, and that's just part of the vast, you know, array of things that, you know, music can do, you know. Yeah.
Yeah. All of it's good. Yeah. But, you know, on a romantic date, you go and there's like a piano player in the restaurant. And it's like, for me, to me, there's no such thing as background music ever. Like, I can't.
Oh, I can't, me too. Yeah.
I can't just let it be. And I know the musicians are being paid to do that. But I always want to go up and say thank you, or, you know, obviously tip and everything. But even that's weird. I just, like, come on. Like, you know, it's the background.
Yeah, a friend of mine did a a friend of mine did a show at a very posh club. And it was really expensive. It was a dinner show. And people were talking so loud. I had to really strain to hear him. And I don't understand. Why would you pay that kind of money to go to hear someone perform? And then you ignore them, basically. It was bizarre.
Hi, you know, that Joey, you know, Joey Stuckey, you both have been on shows together and met each other. And I love that you guys come on shows and then you meet each other, and we haven't even met either one of you in person yet, but you guys meet. That's cool. Just a little jealous of each other. But he went to see Jason Bonham. Now, it was Jason Bonham, you know, John Bonham's son. And we actually interviewed Deborah Bonham on the show, and she's a hell of a blues singer, man. You know, so going from that Led Zeppelin experience that Jason's doing, and he went to the show and he said, you know, it sucked. Everyone was just loud drunks, you know, and it ruined the show. And our friend Steve and Karen out in Asheville, we do a show with them. They have the line on the Rose Bed and Breakfast. They're always touring and they love heavy metal and hard rock and everything. And, you know, every time we talk about Asheville, I say, what about Warren Haynes? You know, he's from there and he does like a Christmas concert, Christmas jam every year, and brings, you know, all these amazing musicians on stage, and they raise money for like Habitat for Humanity and stuff, right? And I keep telling him, like, you know, this Allman Brothers government mule, like, this is, you know, good stuff, and he's a good guy, you know. They go, and I get a text, like, you didn't tell me there was going to be a bunch of drunks bashing into us and almost getting us in a drunk brawl over this guy. And I'm like, what? You guys go to all these metal shows and this doesn't happen, but this happens on a Christmas show of like one of the coolest chilled out guys, but it's about the audience becoming so lit. Like, you know, that's a sad thing. You know, I know that there's concert and places for that and you know, mosh pits and I'm all for it. Do what you want to do. But like, you know, to go see like one of your favorite, like Nancy and I, we went to see Three Dog Night and, Three Dog Night and the other ones, they'd sing Spinning Wheel. Oh, I really love their voices. Blood, Sweat and Tears, right? On one billing. And it was at a casino.
Wow.
And I think they only had one or two living members left, you know, of the original band for each band. But like, I grew up on this music because of Nancy and everything. And like, you're all like, they expected you to just sit, you're not allowed to move. So it's a weird thing about live music now. And it's like, you should be able to feel or like that kind of music. You shouldn't be like strapped into your seat with a seatbelt, you know? So it's weird.
Yeah, I go back and forth about that because my main thing is I'm sensitive to short people because, like, you know, I have several friends that are short, and when I go to concerts like where you're supposed to stand the whole time, they can't see anything.
Oh yeah,
I feel bad for them. You know, it's like, and we try to move to a place where they can see, and then somebody comes and gets right in front of us and doesn't even notice that there's someone short behind them. They don't care. So while I'm 5'11", so I can generally see okay, but I'm just really conscious of that. You can just see in their face, like, you know, they're trying to get into it, but they can't see. I have friends who just got back from a big 3-day music festival where it was like 12 hours of music each day, and they were expected to stand the whole time. And my friend has back issues, and she's like, I had to sit down and just listen for part of the time because I couldn't stand that long. But I also get what you're saying, you know, that, you know, it's hard to be constrained and just sit there. So it's an interesting phenomenon with that. You know, I think it helps if the stage is really elevated to where if everyone's standing, you can still see.
There's a way to do it. And also, not everybody in that typical row fashion. Like, can we have tables for cocktails and stuff? Like, you know, like spread it out a little bit so it feels good.
And,
you know, I'll pay a few more bucks for that, you know. Well, we did this blues festival I was talking about. It was fantastic in Greeley, Colorado. And Larkin and Poe and all these, Watermelon Slim and Shamika Copeland, were all performing. And we were there to film and photograph this. And man, I had to fight off people with their cell phones that weren't doing it for media purposes, man. And I just was like, holy cow. It was like a fight. And I've done festival stuff and like that, you know, over the years, and band photography and everything. And man, these people were crazy. I still got good stuff, but I eventually had to become rude. And I was like, this isn't my personality. Like, I have that side of me for sure. But, like, this isn't me, you know. Like, I want everyone to have a good time, you know. And Chawa was there. That's what I love, Chawa. And it was the day after Dr. John had died. And they brought him out as a mentor. It was a big deal. And just people were like, the way you're clambering on the stage, you're not going to get a good photo with what you're doing. Like, I'm going, what are you doing? You know, so it was more about the selfie thing versus actually hearing the music. And, you know, I think a romantic night, like, I'm not as well, actually the blues to me, it's all good to me. That's romantic enough for me, quite frankly. It's sexy. Blues get sexy. But honestly, when you go out, like, say you go for a romantic meal and you have music and you have like a show, I think it's really nice if it's kind of like how you would watch a comedian, not in the row seating though. Like, if you could have like light dinner and be able to see the performance, and, you know, maybe it's not as rocking, but I'm in that zone. I'll do a little bit of all of it. But wouldn't that be nice where you can actually hear the musicians? I think the venues who make a ton off, see, I watched my language there again, ton off of musicians should get better at how they set up their acoustics and seating and sound. Those things to me, I think that a lot of clubs are not doing as good a job as they should. There's a lot that really do well. And they become the icon places, you know, like when we were in San Diego, we went to the Belly Up, and Belly Up Tavern was one of the best, you know, sound wise. We saw John Mayall there, and, you know, it didn't matter where you went in that room, you heard him and saw him, and it didn't matter how loud the audience got, you know. But maybe that's just a long time ago. I don't know. But I think if the venues got better, since they take a lot of that money and get the drink money, don't you think they should do a better job at times? I don't want to put you on the spot
Oh
because
yeah,
you're a
no.
musician,
I
but.
mean, to me, when you have a facility like that, it should be a big part of it should be the experience of the customers. And I think a lot of them just try to maximize profit and just think, well, people just have to deal with whatever they come up with. And I think a more a much more interesting and much better approach is to really put yourself in the shoes of the people who are coming into your place and try to make it as great an experience as you can, because they're going to come back for other ones, and and the place will be known as a place where you can really have a great time hearing music that you love. So yeah, I think you're definitely right that it's they should,
Yeah.
good businesses, I think, always try to analyze how they can make the people that whatever it is that whatever service or whatever they're providing is the best experience for people, because really a lot of what we do is experience experiential, and we're trying to just have the best experiences we can.
Yeah, I think it's really
So
the
yeah.
bar scene is the worst, you know, at times. But some of my favorite bands I've seen there, you know, but I think it is about actually understanding, like you're saying, if you're trying to give an experience and it shouldn't just be an add-on. I think it's about having spec. We turn down gigs in places as a band because if the acoustic wasn't good, we were just not going to have a good night. You're not going to have a good show. I don't care what you do. It's just going to sound bad as a band. If you know the building is, you know, if you have a building and you put your stage in a bad area, well, rethink it or put in some, you know, some padding and stuff to help it. You know, there's ways to fix a room, maybe. I don't know that part of it, but we actually got to a point where we're like, you know what? We're just, I mean, I remember like literally losing my voice over having to rise over the sound. And then I learned that was not a good way to treat your voice. You know, but I can
Yeah,
go over a really loud noise. I can do
I had a gig
it.
last night at a cabaret concert, and I got a little nervous at the beginning because the room was just really rowdy and very noisy. People sort of paying attention and sort of not, and then I got up to do a couple songs, and it quieted down right away. So I was like, yes, like this is nice. So it doesn't always go that way, but whatever, for whatever reason, last night it worked for me. So that was, it's always a good feeling,
That's that thing, that butterfly thing. You just don't know. You can do your best, but if it's like the rowdy, how do you get across like without blowing your pipes, you know? There's ways to do it. I mean, as a singer, but there's a line as well. And I don't know. Just that's, but you get the butterflies just like a first date, right? It's like you don't know what's going to happen. Yeah, there's music for that too. There's music for love. There's all kinds of songs. It's Valentine's month. It's heart month. And I think it's that interesting month where we're getting out of the cold, but it's still, you know, fireplace magic. There's still the romance. You know, I'm just saying there's, I've thought of so many songs since you've been on the show. It's ridiculous. Like there's no way. How do we do this playlist of love songs? That's insane. I was thinking about Sarah McLachlan. What about her voice? You know, I mean, yeah. And she's back out on
Well,
tour again, which is
there's a
cool.
reason that they use one of her songs in that commercial where they're trying to tug at the heartstrings about animals, right? Because it's such a powerful song, So,
You know, it's, yeah, you're right. You've got a lot of good stuff. Peter Gabriel, Alanis Morissette, Kenny Edwards, Elton John. Hey, listen, I want to, you do your song. That's really good. When he did that for Lady Di too, that was amazing. And he changed that out. And then,
Yeah. Yeah.
but what about Tiny Dancer? Come on, that's a big,
Oh,
yeah.
yeah.
You got Beast, you still might be wrong.
It's a sacrifice too. It's no sacrifice. That's
Oh
the
yeah. I remember
lyrics.
that.
The lyrics of that song are beautiful. Yeah.
I
Yeah.
remember, I guess that's why they call it the blues. That's when I was a kid that
Yeah.
came out. That was a good one. You got the
Yeah.
Weepies, my Be My Honey Pie. Billy
Yeah.
Joel,
That's a
yeah,
fun
come on.
one.
Billy Joel. Bruce Springsteen, that's Nancy's dude. Yeah. She bought me his albums just so that she could have them. It's like, here, I got you another Bruce Springsteen album. I'm like, there you go, Mom. You can have it.
Well,
Yeah.
Tunnel of Love was fantastic. Did you see that movie that was out a few years ago? I don't remember what it was called, but I want to say it was a kid in India, maybe, that was a big Bruce Springsteen fan. And it's a really great movie. Oh, gosh. I don't know. I'm not
I
going to
don't know.
remember what it was, but it was really cool. And some friends that went with me to see it said, "You know what? I wasn't really into Bruce Springsteen, but now after seeing this movie, I kind of like him." And they kind of went and, checked out more of his stuff. He's just,
Blinded
the
by the
Tunnel of Love
Light.
was a, yes. Yep. There you go.
Yeah, and that's one of his
Yep.
songs.
It,
Yeah. Yep.
yeah. That, that's a, it's a really great movie. And Tunnel of Love just, talk about really powerful love songs. I mean, that song itself, Tunnel of Love, using that analogy of a amusement park ride, to, to sort of represent the flow of a relationship is brilliant. It's just, that was a brilliant album.
Now you've got me,
Really,
the Tunnel of Love. I know it has nothing to do with it, but for some reason it takes me to Dire Straits, which I love
Oh
Mark
yeah.
Knopfler. And they did some
Oh
really good.
yeah.
And he did an amazing album with Emmylou Harris. Oh my God. I love that. It's like this really cool, because he got so into Americana, like with Jed Atkins and stuff, you know? And but he had this way of just this allowing something to, like a sound to just carry and slow down so that you could just let things sink in and feel. Like I really don't know how to explain what I'm saying, but like just the way he plays, I think he's one of the best guitarists ever, just because of those just, and he could do signatures like riffs and all that stuff that we all know and love, but just the way he played, and he could be really fast and everything, but he had these ways of just carrying a note and letting it sit for dynamics. He's, I think, one of the best, most dynamic guitarists,
Oh, my
and
friend
then,
Chad Ellis is a guitar player, and he named his cat Knopfler
oh, I love
after
that. I love that. I, yeah, see, but that's it. I mean, it really is about whatever makes you feel, and now I'm going to go listen to music for the rest of the day. I'll be putting this playlist together. So always fun with you, Johnny. Everyone here, johnny.com. Check out his website. Anything coming up before we go that we should know about?
Yes, I do have, I'm going to be dropping a couple songs soon. Probably, well, I have a really cool, guest artist on one of my songs, but I just want to make sure it's going to happen. So I don't think I'm going to talk about it. But the next time I'm on, I'll for sure, well, by that time, I think it'll be coming out. So, we can talk about it next time. But yeah, I have a couple of songs coming out very soon. And yeah, and if you get a chance to check out Just Too Many People, and the other tunes on We'll Never Call You Friend and stuff on Melissa's album, she's got a duet with Dolly Parton coming out at the end of February for they redid Midnight Blue,
Oh,
and
cool.
it's Melissa and Dolly, and that's the album review that I was talking about is going to come out. Right at the same time as the Dolly single drops,
Cool.
so that's something to look forward to. Yeah.
And the one of the best ways people can keep up with you is on Facebook, you're on Instagram, YouTube, And then obviously
TikTok.
listen on Spotify and all that. TikTok, you're on TikTok too? TikTok, you don't stop.
Yes,
And then also on the website is to get your newsletter. I think newsletters are one of the coolest ways because social media, you can miss things, you know? So I like newsletters when you, and you write it, you always write a nice story and, you know, it's like a personal note from Johnny, you know, it's cool. So I
you
think
get a
that's
free
one of the
download
ways.
when you sign. You get a free download when you sign up for my newsletter. So,
Oh, cool. Well, there you go. There you go. Well, thanks so much, Johnny. And listen, have a wonderful Valentine's Day. Happy February
You
to you and
too.
Paco. And we'll talk in
Yes,
March. We'll
thank
be
you.
getting ready for spring. Ooh.
Awesome.
See?
Yeah. Say hi to Nancy.
I will. She says hi, and everyone, she
Okay.
says hi to you too. She'll be back soon. She'll
Great.
be back soon. Nancy just did some ice skating, literally. But she'll be back soon. All right. Everyone, you take care. Thanks for joining us and keep up with us at bigblendradio.com.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Big Blend Radio. Keep up with our shows at bigblendradio.com.